You think we have time to drink a bottle of wine?
We'll just drink what we can, Mr. Yannick said. The Ponzi.
Very good, Adrian said. William was temporarily mesmerized with a lipstick Mrs. Yannick had pulled from her purse. He took off the cap and put the lipstick in his mouth.
For God's sake, Mr. Yannick said.
At least he's quiet, Mrs. Yannick said.
William threw the lipstick to the ground and started to cry. Mrs. Yannick dug through her purse.
I thought I had a lollipop in here.
Adrian headed for the kitchen. She didn't have time for this, and yet she felt responsible.
Is your restaurant child-friendly?
No, it's not. The next time, Adrian would just come right out and say it. No children under 6. Why wasn't this a rule already? She tried to think about how to help the Yannicks. Maybe she should comp their dinner and insist they come back another night?
What, she wondered, would Thatcher do? Where was he?
Ordering table 2, 1 bisque, 1 crab cake, SOS. Where's the duck for 14? Louise, get your head out of the oven, Louise. Ordering table 6, 1 frites, medium well, 1 pasta. That's right, I said pasta, so Henry, you're going to work tonight after all. Ordering table 21.
Fiona noticed Adrian at her elbow. The kitchen was brutally hot, even with 2 standing fans going.
What do you want?
I came to put in an order for table 4.
Who's the server?
Karen, but she's busy.
News flash, we're all busy. What is it?
What?
The order.
Adrian thought for a second. If you gave Fiona the food in the wrong sequence, she got pissed.
Foie gras, crab cake, duck, frites rare.
Fiona scribbled out a ticket.
Fine.
Can you rush it? Adrian said. These people brought their 2-year-old and he's freaking out.
Ordering table 4, 1 foie gras, 1 crab cake, pronto, Fiona said.
Then to Adrian, she said,
what's the kid eating?
He's not eating. But they would like a plastic cup with a top. I know Karen already asked, but...
Sippy cup, Paco, Fiona shouted.
Seconds later, a plastic cup with a bright blue plastic top whizzed through the air. Fiona caught it and handed it to Adrian.
Go get him.
Who?
The kid. Go get the kid and bring him in here.
Adrian thought she had heard wrong. The kitchen with the grill and the fryer and 4 sauté pans going and the fans running was loud. You want me to bring William in here?
If you think it would help the parents enjoy the meal, then yes, Fiona said.
And surprise. She smiled.
I keep some toys in the back office. I love kids.
Adrian popped into the wine cave for a bottle of Ponzi. By the time she reached the podium, she noticed the dining room was not only cooler, but quieter. She looked at table 4. Thatcher was standing by the table with William in his arms. William was chewing on the top of his fire truck. Adrian felt a surge of tenderness and awe, and whatever else it was a woman felt when she first saw her lover holding a small child. She hurried to the bar, where her champagne glass was waiting. She took a drink, then she set down the sippy cup. Orange juice, please, she said. Duncan filled it without a word, and Adrian took the sippy cup and the wine to table 4. She handed the sippy cup to Mrs. Yannick, who brightened. Then Adrian presented the Ponzi to Mr. Yannick.
Juice,
William said. Mr. Yannick nodded at the wine, visibly relaxed. Adrian uncorked and poured. He tasted.
Delicious.
I put a rush on your order, Adrian said as she poured a glass of wine for Mrs. Yannick. Your appetizers should be out any second.
Would it be all right if I took William into the kitchen? Thatcher said. I know our chef would love to see him.
She has some toys in the office, Adrian said.
All right, Mrs. Yannick said. You'll bring him back if he's any problem?
This guy a problem? Thatcher said.
William was resting his head on Thatcher's shoulder, sucking noisily on the cup. Thatcher winked at Adrian and vanished into the back. Mrs. Yannick collapsed in her wicker chair.
I love this place, she said.
4th of July. 250 covers on the books, the maximum. Prefix menu. $60 per person. First seating was at 6. The guests were to eat, then move out to the rented beach chairs in the sand to watch the fireworks. Second seating was at 10. Those guests would watch the fireworks first, then sit down to dinner. Duncan was working the bar outside, and Delilah took over the Blue Granite, her first solo flight. Everything was different, and Adrian was anxious. Thatcher asked her to arrive early, and she was there at 4:15, but the front of the house was deserted. When she poked her head back into the kitchen, it was 182 degrees. The deep fryers were going full blast with the chicken, and Fiona had the ribs in enormous pressure cookers. Adrian checked in pastry to find Mario up to his elbows in fruit. He wasn't listening to music, and he didn't smile when he saw her. I have 50 pounds of peaches that need to be skinned. Everybody else gets a prep cook, and I get left in the shit. 125 peach pies I have to make. I spent all morning with the blueberries. Look at my hands. He held up his palms. They were, of course, impeccably clean. My nails are blue. I can tell you one thing. I'm going to have nightmares tonight. You ever have a nightmare about stone fruit?
No, Adrian said.
Or you have a bushel of peaches looking as gorgeous as Playboy asses, and then you break one open and it's brown and rotten inside, and the next one, and the next one, they're all that way.
I've never had that dream, Adrian said.
Yeah, well, lucky you.
In the kitchen, Adrian heard Fiona yelling about deviled eggs. She wanted 500 deviled eggs.
Adrian retreated to the empty dining room, just as a man with a clipboard walked in saying, I got 250 folding chairs, sweetheart. Where do you want them?
Some help would be nice, she thought. She had never done the 4th of July thing on Nantucket before, and she didn't know where on the beach Thatcher wanted the chairs, or even which direction they should face. If she told this man the wrong thing, then 250 chairs would have to be moved. Adrian pictured herself slogging through the sand in her Jimmy Choo heels. So, better get it right the first time. Adrian called Thatcher's cell phone. Where are you? She said, then thought, try not to sound like a wife.
That Marine, I wanted to get flags for the tables.
The gentleman is here with the chairs. He would like to know where to put them.
On the beach.
Right, but where?
Let me talk to the guy.
Happily, Adrian said. She handed off the phone to the chairman, then surveyed the dining room. What could she do to help? Set the tables?
A roll of red, white, and blue bunting sat on top of the piano, along with a book of music. 101 patriotic songs. Deviled eggs, bunting, patriotic songs. These people really got into it.
A moment later, Karen walked in. It looked like she'd been crying.
It's over, she said. I'm finished with that rat bastard.
Duncan? Karen glared at her. Adrian tried to think. He had been there that morning. She'd heard them in the kitchen, though as a rule, she and Thatcher didn't fraternize with Karen and Duncan. Too much like work.
What happened? Adrian asked.
He's been cheating on me during the day, Karen said. This morning? He says he has golf at 10 with the bartender from Cinco. Fine. I decided to do something different because of the holiday, so I set myself up with a gorgeous Cuban sandwich from Fahey, and then I go to the beach at Mataquichum, and lo and behold, whose car is there? Who is lying on the beach with the hostess from 21 Federal?
The hostess, Adrian said.
You mean Phoebe?
Phoebe, Karen spat.
So I saunter up to the happy couple, and Duncan doesn't even blink. But I could tell he thought I followed him there or was spying on him or something.
However, he pretended like it was no big deal, and therefore I had to pretend like it was no big deal. He asked me to put lotion on his back, and I said, "No way, motherfucker." So then Phoebe pipes up and says she would love to put lotion on his back, and I have to sit there and watch. Her eyes filled up. What am I going to do? Adrian put her arm around Karen, awkwardly, because Karen was so much taller. Duncan was a woman magnet. Karen had to learn to accept it. Before Adrian could find a way to say this, Thatcher walked in, clapping his hands. Good, 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 he said. The two of you can hang the bunting all the way around and try to make it even, okay? Joe's coming in at 4:30 to set the tables, and look, I got flags. He waved a small flag in the air, and his smile faded. Is something wrong? Karen tucked in her shirt and sniffed. I can't work with Duncan, she said. Either he goes, or I go. Thatcher groaned. He yanked at his red, white, and blue necktie to give himself some air. Then, slowly, he said, I told you. I know what you told me, Karen snapped, and she burst into tears. Thatcher's hands hung at his sides. He gazed at Adrian with longing. But what about Karen? Adrian tried to make her eyes very round. You need to have an espresso and calm down, Thatcher said. Or hell, have a drink, I don't care. Just please, pull yourself together, because we have 250 people coming, and you are working, and Duncan is working. And if tomorrow, July 5th, you want to battle it out to see who stays and who goes, that's fine. It's fine on July 5th. It is not fine tonight. Tonight, you have to be a brave soldier. Karen pouted. She was lovely, really. Adrian had a hard time believing that Duncan would ever prefer Phoebe. I'll have an espresso martini, Karen said. Kill two birds. She stepped behind the bar. God, I feel like trashing his perfect setup. Well, please don't, Thatcher said. Delilah is working back there tonight anyway. Duncan's on the beach. You'll barely have to see him. Karen slammed a martini glass on the blue granite, then poured generously from the 888 bottle. Brilliant. Thatcher put his arm around Adrian and kissed her ear. You'll have to hang the bunting by yourself, he said. What are you doing? Adrian asked. Everything else. By 5:50, the restaurant was ready. The bunting hung evenly all the way around the edge of the restaurant, and the tables were set with a tiny American flag standing in each silver bud vase. On the beach, 250 chairs were set up in perfect rows. It was a beautiful night. Adrian had wolfed down a plate of tangy, falling-apart ribs and 3 deviled eggs at family meal, and then she rushed to brush her teeth. When she went to the bar to get her champagne, Duncan confronted her. I'm innocent, he said. Delilah, would you pour me a glass of Laurent Perrier, please? Adrian said. Delilah, also wearing a red, white, and blue necktie, seemed harried. She studied the bottles in the well. Where's the champagne? She asked Duncan. In the door of the little fridge, he said. You better learn quick. You only have 10 minutes. And then, turning back to Adrian, he said, I know she told you. Adrian watched Delilah grapple with the champagne bottle. It took her forever just to unwrap the cork. Finally, Duncan wrested the bottle from his sister. He had it open in 2 seconds, and he poured Adrian's drink. Hey, Delilah said. I'm supposed to learn how to do it myself. Duncan ignored her. She talked to you, he said to Adrian. So if she asks, you tell her I'm innocent. Golf got canceled. I bumped into Phoebe in town. Adrian picked up her champagne. Tell her yourself, she said. I'm not getting involved. She walked to the podium to await the onslaught with Thatcher, 125 people arriving at once. What was your best 4th of July? Thatcher asked her.
This sounded like another getting-to-know-you question. Why didn't he ever ask her when she had time to answer? I'll have to think about it, she said. Tonight is going to be right up there, Thatcher said. Nobody does this holiday better than we do. By 6:30, 125 people were sitting down, including the parishes, the local author and her entourage, Holt Millman with a party of 10, Senator Kennedy, Mr. Kennedy the investor, Stuart and Phyllis, a couple who dined at the bistro so often that their college-aged kids referred to the food as Mom's Home Cooking, the Mr. Smith for whom the blueberry pie was named, and his wife, Kat, her sister, and their husbands, Lee Stanford with friends from Idaho, and Leon Cross and his mistress. The place was hopping. Rex played Yankee Doodle Dandy, followed by Camptown Races. The busboys brought out the pretzel bread and mustard, and when Adrian poked her head into the kitchen, Paco and Eddie were frantically plating shrimp skewers. Adrian ran the skewers out. 10 of the 30 tables were drinking champagne. The corks sounded like fireworks. Adrian saw Karen out by the beach bar. From the looks of things, Karen was letting Duncan have it, but in a quiet, scary way. Letting him have it while Adrian ran Karen's apps and Delilah drowned in drink orders.
Adrian, Delilah cried, I need help.
Rex launched into American Pie. Adrian ran to the wine cave for wine. She refilled Delilah's juice bottles and went to the kitchen for citrus. It was even hotter in there than before, so hot that Fiona had taken off her chef's jacket. She worked in just a white t-shirt that had a damp spot between her breasts. It seemed like it took forever to get Delilah out of the weeds, yet Rex was still playing American Pie, and half the restaurant was singing. Adrian walked by table 15, where Thatcher was chatting with Brian and Jennifer Devlin. She heard the word Galapagos and stopped in her tracks. A woman at the table behind had gotten up to use the ladies' room, and Adrian took great slow pains in folding the woman's napkin so that she could listen to Thatcher. We leave on October 9th, he said, flying to Quito overnight, then to the islands for 10 days. We're on a 50-foot ship. I'm really looking forward to it. Adrian returned to the podium. Rex finished American Pie, and half the restaurant applauded. She thought back to her first breakfast with Thatch. As soon as we close this place, I'm taking Fee to the Galapagos. She wants to see the funny birds. He had told Adrian right from the beginning that he was going away with Fiona. There was no reason for Adrian to expect that he would change his travel plans just because he and Adrian were now dating. But she did expect it. She had made peace, sort of, with the dinners. The dinners were business. They talked about the restaurant, mostly, he said. The dinners were important. Fine. Adrian could live with the dinners. He came to her house afterward and always spent the night. But hearing him talk about 10 days in the Galapagos with Fiona physically hurt. And yet, what could she say? His best friend was sick, and she wanted to see the funny birds. He would take her. Karen came in off the beach and charged past the podium into the ladies' room. The ladies' room only accommodated one person at a time, so Adrian knocked. It's me, she said. Karen cracked the door.
Men, she said, leaving Adrian with nothing to do but agree.
By 9:15, most of the tables had finished eating, and Adrian went crazy running credit cards. The guests moved out onto the beach to order more drinks and settle in their chairs. Adrian ordered a coffee. She was exhausted, and her red t-shirt dress was soaked with sweat. Thatcher rallied the waitstaff.
We have an hour of peace and quiet. Once these tables are stripped and reset, you're free until the finale of the fireworks starts. Then I want you back in here and ready for second seating.
The fireworks began at 9:10. By that time, the guests for second seating had all arrived, and the only people working out front were Duncan, who was pouring the drinks, and Bruno and Christo, who were serving them. Thatcher took Adrian by the hand and led her out of the restaurant. She wanted to say something to him about the Galapagos, but she had yet to come up with the right words. "Please don't go. Take me with you? Or how about this? Would you at least not say you're looking forward to it?" He led her into the sand dunes behind the restaurant. Adrian took off her shoes and climbed after him. They plopped in the sand, hidden from the crowd by eelgrass. Thatcher held Adrian in his lap like she was a child, and she pressed her face into his neck. She could feel his pulse against her cheek. "How are you?" he asked. "Isn't this great?" There was a bang, and a burst of red exploded in the sky, like a giant poppy losing its petals. The water shimmered with color, then gold, blue, purple, white. Adrian's best 4th of July, just like the other best moments of her life, had happened before her mother got sick. Adrian was 11 years old. In the morning, Rosalie and Dr. Don worked together in the kitchen preparing a salad for the potluck dinner while they watched Wimbledon on TV. Then, at 4 o'clock, they walked across the street. Adrian remembered her old neighborhood in summer. The smell of grass, the huge, beautiful trees, the grumble of lawnmowers, and the whirring of sprinklers. 7 families gathered at the fiddler's pool for swimming and croquet and a cookout, and popsicles, and flashlight tag and sparklers. Adrian had been part of a family with the other kids, kids she hadn't seen or thought of for years and years. Caroline Fiddler, Jake Clark, Toby and Trey Wiley, Tricia Gillette, Natalie, Blake, and David Anola. The girls lined up their Dr. Scholl sandals and lay back in the grass looking up at the stars and searching for any hint of the big fireworks being set off in Philadelphia. They talked, naively, about boys. Natalie Anola had a crush on Jake Clark. The world of boys at that point to Adrian was like a wide, unexplored field, and she was standing at the edge. At 10 o'clock, Rosalie and Dr. Don, flush with an evening of Mount Gay and tonics, dragged Adrian home, where she fell asleep in her clothes. Happy, safe, excited about the possibilities of her life. That one was the best. And Adrian had spent all the interceding years mourning, not only the loss of her mother, but the loss of that happiness. Right this second, she felt a glimmer of it. Nantucket Island, in Thatcher's arms, watching the colors soar and burst overhead, feeling a breeze, finally, coming off the water. "Forget the Galapagos," she told herself. "Forget that there were 125 people yet to feed. Forget that Fiona would have twice the amount of time alone with Thatcher that Adrian had. Forget all that, because this moment was great. Great enough to make it into her memories." Adrian savored every second, because she feared it wouldn't last. Chapter 8. Hydrangeas. July was true summer. It was 85 degrees and sunny, beach weather, barbecue weather, blue bistro weather. The bar was packed every night, and the phone rang off the hook. Floris came in to change the flowers in the restaurant from irises to hydrangeas. Hydrangeas like bushy heads, bluer than blue. Adrian was admiring the bouquet of hydrangeas on the hostess podium when the private line rang. It was a Monday morning, and she was covering the phones while Thatcher met with a rep from Classic Wines. "Good morning, Blue Bistro." "Adrian?" "Yes." "Drew Amon Keller. I'm surprised you're not out jogging. It's a beautiful day." "Well, you know," Adrian said, glancing nervously around the dining room, "I have to work." "I'm calling to confirm a rumor," Drew Amon Keller said. Adrian held the receiver to her forehead. Should she just hang up? What rumor is that? Is Tam Vinodin eating at the bistro tomorrow night? Tam Vinodin, the actress? Can you confirm that she has a reservation? He asked. Adrian laughed.
Ha! I wish she did. Sorry, Drew.
She hung up. A few minutes later, Jay-Z's truck pulled into the parking lot. He rolled in the door with two boxes of New York strip steaks on a dolly. Hey, Adrian, he said.
Hey, she said. How's everything going? How's Shaughnessy?
She's fine, he said. She leaves for camp in 2 weeks.
Is that good or bad?
It's good, he said. I'm going to sneak over here for a vacation.
That'll be nice, Adrian said. Fiona will be happy.
Jay-Z backed up the dolly. Before he headed into the kitchen, he said,
I heard Tam Vinodin is eating here tomorrow night.
You did?
Yeah, guy on the boat told me.
She hasn't called, Adrian said. She flipped a page in the reservation book.
I hope she calls soon. We're almost full.
As Jay-Z pushed into the kitchen, Hector popped out. Of all the Subiacos, Hector was Adrian's least favorite. He used the foulest language and was merciless when he teased his brothers and cousins. Adrian was not excited to see his tall, lanky frame loping toward her.
Hey, bitch, he said.
Adrian rolled her eyes. What do you want, Hector?
Special delivery, he said.
He palmed a fax on top of the reservation book.
It's our lucky day.
Tam Vinodin was coming to eat at the Blue Bistro.
She wanted table 20 at 7:30, and she wanted it for the night. She would allow one photographer, a woman almost as famous as she was, to take her picture while she ate. She was on the Atkins diet. She wanted Fiona to make her a plate of avocado wrapped in prosciutto and medjool dates stuffed with peanut butter. She would drink Dom Perignon. Adrian checked the book. Tuesday nights, the Parishes ate at table 20 first seating, and one of Mario's friends from the CIA was coming in with his wife at 9. Adrian would have to bump them both for Tam Vinodin. She wondered about the photographer. Would she need a table too? What about the Dom Perignon? The bistro didn't carry any. Adrian called Thatcher on his cell. Since he was with a wine rep, he could order a case. Her call went to voicemail.
Thatch, it's me, Adrian said.
She was so excited she could barely keep from screaming.
Tam Vinodin is coming in tomorrow night at 7:30. We need a case of DP. Call me.
Adrian loved Tam Vinodin with a passion. She was sexier than J-Lo and prettier than Jennifer Aniston.
And she was eating at the bistro.
Adrian would get to meet her, open her champagne, deliver her chips and dip. She reread the fax. She had to email her father. Adrian took the fax into the kitchen. Hector was drizzling olive oil over a hotel pan of fresh figs, and Paco was shredding cabbage for the coleslaw. Where's Fiona? Adrian asked. Hector nodded at the office. The door was closed. Adrian knocked.
Come in.
Adrian opened the door. Fiona was sitting at Thatcher's desk filling out order forms. She had plastic tubes up her nose. She was attached to an oxygen tank.
Oh, sorry, Adrian said.
Fiona looked up.
What is it?
Adrian tried not to stare at the tubes.
Tam Vinodin is coming in tomorrow night.
Fiona blinked.
Who?
Tam Vinodin? The actress?
Fiona shook her head.
Never heard of her.
Never heard of her? She must be kidding.
You must be kidding, Adrian said.
Fiona took a deep breath, then coughed.
What can I do for you, Adrian?
This is a fax from her manager, Adrian said. She wants all this stuff. She wants... Here, you can see. Adrian let the fax flutter onto the desk. Fiona read,
She can't have 20 tomorrow night, and certainly not at 7:30. It's Tuesday. She can't have a photographer. She can't have DP, and I'm not making that ridiculous food. Fiona handed the fax back to Adrian. If she wants to sit at table 8 and drink Laurent Perrier and eat off the menu like everybody else, then fine. Otherwise, send her to the summer house.
Wait a minute, Adrian said.
This is Tam Vinodin, Fiona. You don't know who this person is.
That's right, Fiona said. Thank you, Adrian.
Adrian appealed to Thatcher when he returned from his meeting, but he backed up Fiona.
She's right, he said. We might be able to slide Mario's buddy to table 21, but we can't move the parishes.
Why not?
Because they're the parishes.
But this is Tam Vinodin.
I didn't order DP, and Fiona won't make special dishes.
He checked the fax.
Bejeweled dates? Is she kidding? As for the photographer, do I really need to go on?
No.
She'll be happier at the summer house, Thatcher said. Sorry, do you want to call her manager or do you want me to do it?
You do it, Adrian said. I'm going home. On Tuesday, Tam Vinodin's visit to Nantucket rated a front-page story in the Cape Cod Times and the Inquirer and Mirror, and there was a two-column article in USA Today written by Drew Ammon Keller describing the house she rented on Squam Road, naming all the shops where she dropped bundles of cash, Dessert, Gypsy, Hepburn, and disclosing where she ate, the Nantucket Golf Club, 56 Union, the Summer House. Mr. Amenkeller made a point of noting that Ms. Vinodin's trip to the Blue Bistro had been canceled because Chef Fiona Kemp would not accommodate her strict adherence to Dr. Atkins' diet. One of the Subiacos had clipped Drew Amenkeller's article out of the paper and taped it to the wall next to the reach-in. Under the picture of Tam Vinodin, sitting on the bench outside Congdon and Coleman Insurance in cut-off jean shorts, someone had written, "Feed me fondue." Wednesday was Adrian's day off, and she forgot about Tam Vinodin. Wednesday night, Thatcher took Adrian to Company of the Cauldron for dinner, and he ate every bite. After dinner, they went back to Thatcher's house, a cottage behind one of the big houses in town. His cottage was only large enough to accommodate a bed and a dresser, and on top of the dresser, a TV for watching college football in the fall. There was a bathroom and a rudimentary kitchen. Not exactly impressive digs, but Adrian was honored to be in his private space. She studied the pictures of his brothers. She flipped through his high school yearbook. In the back, on the best friends page, she found a picture of Thatcher with a bad haircut and acne on his nose, and Fiona, who looked exactly the same as she did now, 20 years later. Adrian and Thatcher spent the entire next day together. They drove Thatcher's pickup to Coteau, where they found a deserted cove and fell asleep in the sun. Thatcher skipped rocks and built Adrian a sandcastle. At 4 o'clock, he dropped her off at home so she could shower and change. She caught a ride to work with Karen, who informed Adrian that she and Duncan were back together, though Duncan was on probation.
"One more fuck-up, and it's over," Karen said.
Adrian tried to listen seriously, but she couldn't stop smiling. The sandcastle Thatcher built had been as beautiful as a wedding cake. There were 229 covers on the book. Family meal was grilled cheeseburgers and the first corn on the cob of the season. Thatcher was late, but all Adrian could think of was how happy she was going to be when he came walking through the door. The phone rang, the private line. It was Thatcher.
"Is everyone there?" he said.
Adrian turned around to survey the dining room. "Everyone except Elliot," she said. "It's his night off."
"Okay," he said. "Listen, I need you to listen. Are you listening?"
She heard the normal sounds of the restaurant, the swinging kitchen door, the chatter of the waitstaff, the first notes of the piano, but none of that could overtake the high-pitched ringing in her ears. She could tell he was about to say something awful.
"Yes," she said.
Fiona isn't doing well. Her doctor wants her to go to Boston for at least 3 days, and I'm going with her. Adrian stared at the kitchen door. She hadn't realized Fiona wasn't in. "You'll be in Boston for 3 days?" she said. "At least 3 days," Thatcher said. "Antonio knows, and he's told the kitchen staff. They're used to it, okay? For them, this is no big deal, and you're going to cover for me." He paused. "Adrian?" "What?" "You do a terrific job. On the floor, on the phone, everything. The waitstaff knows how to tip out, so all you have to do at the end of the night is add up the receipts and make a deposit of the cash in the morning. The restaurant can run itself."
"What about reservations?"
"Just do the best you can."
"Can I call you? You're taking your cell?"
"Absolutely. I have a room at the Boston Harbor Hotel. You should call me there before you lock up at night, and I'll need you in at 10 to do reconfirmations and answer the phone."
"Okay."
"I'll pay you."
"You don't have to pay me," Adrian said. She felt like a tidal wave was crashing over the perfect sandcastle of her life. Thatcher gone for 3 days. Fiona sick enough for a hospital. Adrian left in charge of the restaurant in the height of the season. It was impossible, wasn't it, what he was asking of her? As though he had told her she had to land an airplane or dock an ocean liner. "You can pay me, but I'm not worried about the money. I'm worried about you and Fiona. Is she going to be all right?"
"I'll know more tomorrow," Thatcher said. "She has a lot of anxiety. Father Ott is sitting with her right now."
"Father Ott?"
"She's afraid she's going to hell," Thatcher said.
He cleared his throat.
"Listen, I have to go. Call me before you close, okay?"
"Okay," Adrian said. He hung up. Some time would have been nice. A few minutes to collect herself, to wrap her mind around what this phone call meant. But it was 6 o'clock. The waitstaff wanted confirmation that they were perfect. They were. And Rex played the theme from Romeo and Juliet. The first table arrived, a male couple who was staying at the Point Breeze. Adrian sat them at table one, handed them menus, and told them to enjoy their meals. But when she said this, it sounded like a question. And in fact, as she looked at their perplexed, tan faces, she was thinking, Fiona is afraid she's going to hell. Adrian headed for the bar. She needed her drink.
"Where's the boss man?" Duncan asked.
How much was she supposed to say? Thatcher hadn't given her any guidelines. "He's not coming in tonight."
"Out last night and tonight?" Duncan said. "You need to take it easy on him."
"Funny," Adrian said. "May I have my champagne, please?"
Duncan nodded at the door. "I'll bring it over to you," he said.
"You have work." Two couples were standing by the podium. Adrian hurried over. "Good evening," she said. "Name?"
"You don't remember us?" asked a man with red hair and a red goatee. "We were in 2 nights ago. You talked us into a bottle of that pink champagne. We're from Florida." "Boca Raton," one of the women said.
Adrian stared at the foursome, utterly lost. She would have sworn she had never seen them before in her life.
"You told us you used to work at the Mar-a-Lago," the red-haired man said.
"I did," Adrian said. She must have. Okay, she had to get a grip. Shake off this feeling of being stranded in the Sahara without any Evian. She scanned the book, looking for a familiar name. Cavendish? Xavier? She smiled. "Please forgive me. I can't remember what name the reservation is under."
"Levy," the man said. "But our feelings are hurt."
Adrian sat them at table 15 and made a mental note to send these people, whom she still did not remember, some chips and dip. She saw Leon Cross and his wife waiting by the podium. Leon's wife was a TV producer,
a hotshot who recently tried to talk Thatcher into a reality show set at the bistro. Initially, Adrian had thought the bistro would make a great setting for a reality show, but if a camera had filmed the last 15 minutes, no audience would believe it. Anxiety, death, and hell among the hardest-to-get reservations in town? Then there was Leon Cross himself, who sometimes came to the restaurant with his wife when he sat at table 20. Adrian led them there now, but just as often came with his mistress, who was older than his wife and a nicer woman, when he sat at table 19 in a dark corner under the awning. No one would believe it. Party of eight from the Wawanette, party of four waitresses from the West Ender celebrating a birthday, party of five that was a single mom out with her two kids and their spouses. Then a series of deuces, then a foretop that was two couples celebrating the fact that they'd been friends for 20 years. The phone rang and rang. Adrian checked each time to see if it was the private line. No, she didn't answer. Delilah ran her a glass of champagne, and Adrian took half of it in one long gulp. She hurried into the kitchen to put in two orders of chips. The kitchen seemed the same, except that instead of Fiona, Antonio was expediting.
"Ordering 16," he called out. "One foie gras, one Caesar." "Yes, chef," Eddie said. "Ordering 12," Antonio said. "Two chowder, one beet, one foie gras killed. Henry baby, okay?" "Yes, chef," Henry said.
Adrian held up two fingers to Paco, and he started slicing potatoes on his mandolin. Adrian knew it would take 6 minutes, and she should get back out front, but she lingered in the kitchen for a minute. Everything seemed way too normal. The Subiacos worked as though nothing was wrong. The baseball game was on. She poked her head back into pastry. Mario was pulling a tray of brownies out of the convection oven. Adrian stared him down. They had never talked about Fiona's illness.
"What?" he said. "You want one?"
"Thatcher and Fiona are in Boston," Adrian whispered. "They're going to be gone for 3 days. Fiona is in the hospital." Mario squeezed Adrian's face to make fish lips. It hurt.
"It's okay," he said. "This happens. They put Fiona on a vent and it clears things out. They pump her full of miracle drugs. It makes things better. Trust me, it's no big deal."
He let Adrian's face go.
"Really?"
Adrian said.
15 years ago, we're in skills one together, and the day before our practical, she goes into the hospital. Big hospital down in the city. So I know something's wrong. As soon as I finish my test, I take the train to see her, and she tells me about her thing. And I think maybe I'm gonna cry. But then, I realize Fee is the toughest person I know. She's gonna survive. And like I said, that was 15 years ago. She goes back to school the next week, makes up her practical, scores a 97 out of 100. I get a 73. Suddenly, she's the one who's worried about me, and for good reason.
Mario cut the crispy edges off the brownies.
She'll outlive us all. You watch.
Okay, Adrian said. That was what she wanted to hear. She smacked Mario's butt and walked back to the hotline. Spillman burst into the kitchen.
"Adrian, can you open wine for table 15? I'm slammed, and they say they're friends of yours."
"Sure," Adrian said. She returned to the dining room. Rex was playing Barry Manilow. She took the Levy's wine order, retrieved the bottle from the wine cave, opened the wine, and served it, all in under 5 minutes, at which point she remembered the chips and dip. Adrian delivered chips and dip to the Levy's, then Leon Cross. She returned to the podium and finished her champagne.
Run the restaurant by herself, she thought.
Piece of cake.
Smack in the middle of first seating, two women walked in wearing baseball hats and jeans. Adrian felt a headache coming on. The bistro didn't have a dress code, she reminded herself.
the best tippers were often the guests who were underdressed. One of the women was wearing giraffe print Prada mules and Gucci sunglasses. She took the sunglasses off as she approached the podium. "Is it all right if we eat at the bar?" Adrian was caught completely off guard. She made a gurgling sound. It was Tam Vinadin. "Sure," Adrian said finally, her mind ricocheting all over the place. She wanted to shout, but she had to remain cool. She wanted everyone in the restaurant to know Tam Vinadin was there, yet it was imperative that no one found out. Did anyone recognize her? She was beautiful, and all the more so because she wore no makeup and had her hair in a ponytail under a hat. Her friend was... no one Adrian recognized. Sister, maybe. "Follow me," Adrian said. She plucked two menus and led the women to the bar.
"Duncan," Tam Vinadin said.
"Hey, Tam," he said. "I heard you were on island." They kissed.
Adrian stared at Duncan in genuine awe. "This is my cousin Bindi," Tam said. "We decided to stay through the weekend. It's so relaxing here."
"Cool," Duncan said. "What can I get you ladies to drink?"
"Champagne," Tam Vinadin said.
"Lauren Perrier?" Duncan asked.
Tam Vinadin took off her hat and let her fabulous black hair free of its elastic.
"Sure." "Adrian, are you willing to share your bottle with these ladies?" Duncan said.
Adrian realized she had been gaping.
"Okay," she said. Then she beat it into the kitchen.
"Okay," she said to Paco 10 seconds later. "Guess who's eating at the bar?"
"I don't give a shit," Paco said.
He was helping Eddie build club sandwiches.
"I'm fucking busy."
"Tam Vinadin," Paco yelled to Hector, who was grilling off steaks.
"She's here, eating at the bar."
Hector whooped, then pleaded with Antonio.
"Can I go out and see her, Tony? Please, man."
Antonio wiped his forehead with a side towel. He was older than Fiona by at least 10 years, and it showed. He was sweating. He looked exhausted, and second seating hadn't even started yet.
"Tam Vinadin's here?" he asked Adrian.
Adrian nodded. "I came to put in a VIP order."
"Hers is in the reach-in," Antonio said. "Fiona ordered those medjool dates, just in case."
"You're kidding," Adrian said. She checked the reach-in and found a plate of dates stuffed with peanut butter. Karen slammed into the kitchen.
"Is Adrian in here?"
Adrian turned around, holding the dates. "Did you see who's..."
"You promised me you wouldn't," Karen said.
She threw her hands up in the air. Her lovely neck was getting red and splotchy.
"You put Tam Vinadin at the bar?"
"She asked to sit at the bar. She knows Duncan from..."
"You promised me you wouldn't do it," Karen said. "You could have put her at table 3.
"Put Tam Vinadin at table 3?
"Because now she's out there with Duncan."
"She's a movie star," Adrian said. "She's not interested in Duncan."
"He's interested in her."
"No, he's not."
"Shit, yeah, he is,"
Hector interjected.
"Shut up," Karen said. "You're a bitch," Hector said. "You think he wants you instead?" "You're a bitch, bitch," Karen said.
"No fighting in the kitchen," Antonio said.
He clapped his hands and pointed to the door.
"I don't want to hear anything else about the movie star. The dates, the organic peanut butter, fine, but not another word, and no more special treatment."
As it turned out, Tam Vinadin didn't want special treatment. She was thrilled about the dates and offered one to her cousin, one to Duncan, one to Adrian, one to Leon Cross's wife, who knew Tam from New York and popped over to say hello, and one to Karen, who passed by the bar 3 times in 2 minutes to keep an eye on Duncan. Everyone refused. "You don't know what you're missing," she said. Rex played "Georgia on My Mind." Adrian forced herself to return to the podium. The phone rang, and she realized she hadn't thought about Thatcher for almost half an hour. She wanted to call him and thank him and Fiona.
"Thank you for creating a restaurant so wonderful that people like Tam Vinodin want to come even without a reservation, even in their jeans. Thank you for ordering the medjool dates and the organic peanut butter, even though you never go to the movies or read People magazine. You made someone happy tonight. You make people happy every night. You're going to heaven."
That night, Thatcher didn't answer his cell phone. Adrian tried 3 times, then called the hotel, but he didn't answer in his room either. It was nearly 2 o'clock in the morning. Adrian left a message in his room, then called his cell phone a 4th time, and left the same message. "Hi, it's me. Everything went smoothly tonight. We made 21.6 on the floor and another 1970 at the bar." Adrian paused, thinking about how astounding those numbers were. Because she was the only one working, she herself had cleared over $600 in tips. And yet, under the circumstances, the money seemed very beside the point. "So I'll take it home and make a deposit at the bank on my way in tomorrow morning. Call me. I hope everything is okay. I'm thinking of you." The first call that came in the following morning was on the private line. Adrian punched the button, thinking, "Thatcher, Thatcher, Thatcher." There had been no message from him on the machine. "Good morning," Adrian said. "Blue Bistro."
"Harry Henderson for Thatcher, please."
Harry Henderson of Henderson Realty. Adrian had sat the guy 6 times, and he still didn't know her name. "This is Adrian, Harry," she said. "Thatcher won't be in today." There was a big noise of annoyance on the other end of the line.
"What are you talking about? Forget it. I'll call him at home."
"He's off island," Adrian said.
"No!"
Harry cried out, as though he'd been shot.
"Listen, I have a couple standing in my office this minute who are extremely interested in the property. I'm bringing them over."
"Wait," Adrian said. She glanced around the dining room. The cleaning crew had been in, but the restaurant had that dull, daytime look. And Adrian was in jean shorts and flip-flops. When she'd walked back into the kitchen upon her arrival, Eddie and Hector were having a contest to see who knew more curse words.
"I don't think you should come now. Nothing's ready."
"You might not understand real estate, Amanda," Harry Henderson said. "We have to strike while the iron is hot. See you in 10.
He hung up. Adrian dialed Thatcher's cell. She got his voicemail. Then she called the hotel. Ditto. She called his cell again. What was the point of taking his cell phone if he wasn't going to answer it? Then she pictured the hushed corridors of the hospital, the room where Fiona lay in bed hooked up to a ventilator, worrying about hell. She left a message. "Harry Henderson is on his way over with some prospective buyers. I told him to wait, but he couldn't be dissuaded. He thinks my name is Amanda. Call me at the restaurant." Adrian saw the Sid Wehner truck pull into the parking lot. Jay-Z parked diagonally, taking up 16 spots. He shut off the engine and climbed down from his seat. Instead of going around to open the back, he marched inside. "Jay-Z," Adrian said. He stared at her, and Adrian could see he wasn't doing well. Just looking at him made Adrian feel like a person with her act together.
"Have you heard anything?" he said.
She shook her head.
"You haven't talked to Thatch?"
"He's not answering his cell, and I couldn't reach him at the hotel."
"That's not good news," Jay-Z said. "Either her O2 sats are low or she has another infection."
"I saw her the other day hooked up to oxygen," Adrian said. "But she seemed okay." Jay-Z took hold of the podium as though he planned to walk away with it.
"I love her," he said. "I really fucking love her."
"I know," Adrian said.
I'm married, he said. My wife and I are in love with other people.
Adrian met this with silence. As interested as she was, she didn't have time for a confessional this minute.
You're probably wondering why we don't get divorced, he said. The reason is 8 years old and 4 feet tall.
Shaughnessy? He nodded.
Jamie says if I file for divorce, she'll take Shaughnessy away. And Jamie is just enough of a bitch that she means it. The guy she's been screwing for the last 5 years is married and won't leave his wife. And if she can't be happy, she won't let me be, either.
Oh, Adrian said. Jay-Z paced the floor in front of the restrooms.
I love Fiona, but I can't lose my daughter.
The phone rang. The private line.
I have to take this, Adrian said. It might be Thatch.
Jay-Z nodded.
Good morning, Adrian said. Blue Bistro.
What in God's name is going on with this truck? Harry Henderson asked. We're in the parking lot, and this truck is blocking the front view of the restaurant. Do you hear what I'm saying? We can't see the front.
It's deliveries, Adrian said.
Well, tell him to move.
With that, Harry Henderson hung up. Adrian smiled at Jay-Z apologetically. Out in the parking lot, she heard Harry Henderson honking his horn.
They want you to move, she said.
They can fuck themselves.
I agree, Adrian said.
Except it's the realtor with potential buyers. They want to see the front of the restaurant.
Jay-Z ran a hand over his thinning hair.
Do you understand about Shaughnessy?
It doesn't matter if I understand, she said. It only matters if I know.
And she does understand, or she claims she does. But she doesn't have kids. It's difficult to comprehend losing a child when you don't have one of your own.
Harry Henderson honked again.
I'll move, Jay-Z said.
He took a Blue Bistro pencil and wrote a phone number on Adrian's reconfirmation list.
Here's my cell. Will you call me if you hear anything?
Of course, Adrian said.
They're filthy rich.
This was what Harry Henderson whispered in Adrian's ear while the prospective buyers wandered through the restaurant. Adrian had been expecting a couple who looked filthy rich, an older couple, distinguished, like the Parrishes. Instead, Harry introduced Scott and Lucy Elpern. Scott Elpern was handsome, despite his best efforts. He was tall and had a just-out-of-the-locker-room thing going on in jeans, a dirty gray t-shirt, and a Red Sox cap. The wife, Lucy, wore a flowered muumuu that she must have picked up at Goodwill. She was hugely pregnant. 3 days past her due date, she told Adrian when they shook hands, as though she didn't want anyone around her getting too comfortable. Lucy herself could not have looked less comfortable. She was swollen and perspiring. Her face was red, her hair oily. She resembled one of the cherry tomatoes the kitchen roasted until the skin split and the seeds oozed out.
Technology billionaires, Harry Henderson said. Nobody thinks there are technology billionaires anymore, but I found two of them.
Adrian looked out the window by the podium. Jay-Z had swung the truck around so that it was perpendicular to the restaurant, and now he was going about his business of unloading crates of eggs and peaches and figs. He moved sluggishly, plodding like he was being asked to carry gold bullion. The Elpern stood by table 20 gazing out at the water. Lucy Elpern rested her hands on her belly. Harry Henderson gave them a moment to enjoy the view. Then he gently led Lucy Elpern up the two steps and through the bar area.
This is a blue granite bar, Harry said.
Lucy eyed her husband.
We could keep that.
Of course, Harry said. And there's a state-of-the-art wine room and, naturally, an industrial kitchen.
Can we see the kitchen? Lucy asked.
Of course, Harry boomed.
He looked to Adrian for confirmation.
I didn't tell anyone you were coming, Adrian said.
We'll just poke our heads in, Harry said. Is Fiona back there?
No, Adrian said.
Too bad, Harry said to the Elperns. You could have gotten a glimpse of the most famous chef on the island.
He led Scott Elpern to the kitchen door.
I have to use the ladies' room, Lucy Elpern said to Adrian. This baby is sitting on my bladder.
Adrian pointed to the bathroom door. Lucy rubbed her belly. Her fingers were swollen. The diamond wedding band she wore cut into her flesh. Her ankles looked soft and squishy, like water balloons. She had on a pair of turquoise flip-flops, the plastic kind you buy at the five and dime.
I have to go every 5 minutes, she said.
Once Harry and Scott disappeared into the kitchen and Lucy closed the door of the restroom, Adrian dialed Thatcher's number. Voicemail. She hung up. She heard water in the bathroom, and a second later, Lucy emerged. Instead of heading into the kitchen, she wandered over to the podium, where Adrian was pretending to review the reconfirmation list.
You've worked here a long time? Lucy asked.
Not really, Adrian said. Only about 6 weeks.
Harry told us that most of the staff has been here for years.
Most of the staff has.
But not you?
Not me. Lucy Elpern inhaled.
This place has good karma.
Are you in the restaurant business? Adrian asked.
No, Lucy said, and she laughed.
We're going to demolish and build a real house.
But it would be nice if there were things we could keep. The bar, for example.
We could put it in our family room, maybe.
In your family room? And then we could say, this is the bar that used to be in a famous restaurant.
She picked a pack of matches out of the bowl.
The Blue Bistro.
You've never eaten here? Adrian asked.
No, we've only been on Nantucket for a week, but we really want a second home on the beach. We live on Beacon Street in Boston. Nice, but very urban.
Adrian checked her reservation sheet. There were 232 on the books for tonight, but she did have a couple of deuces left during first seating.
Why don't you come in tonight on the house? Adrian said. Around 6.
Lucy smiled, then ran a hand through her unwashed hair.
You're a doll to offer. That way we'd know what it might feel like to eat.
In our new dining room. Let me ask Scott. She waddled to the kitchen door and with great effort pushed it open. Adrian stared at the phone. She wanted to tell Thatcher that some people were here who wanted to demolish his restaurant, but salvage the blue granite bar to put on display in their family room, like a museum piece from a country they had never visited. She heard a noise and looked out the window. Jay-Z was pulling out of the parking lot.
Don't go, Adrian thought.
The feeling of abandonment returned, and she picked up the phone to call Thatcher, but at that minute, Harry Henderson and the Elperns emerged from the kitchen.
They weren't very friendly back there, Harry said.
Adrian tried not to smile. She wondered if Hector had shared his 17 words for copulation.
You support the wrong baseball team, Adrian said, nodding at Scott's hat.
They're White Sox fans.
Scott shrugged.
Nice refrigerator, he said.
We'd like to come to dinner tonight, Lucy said.
And I'll join them, Harry Henderson said. Amanda, you're a genius.
At 5 o'clock, Adrian still hadn't heard from Thatcher. She led a very brief menu meeting, keeping her voice stern so that no one would be brave enough to mention the elephant in the room. Thatcher is absent from class again today. It was Friday night, and the first people in the door were the Parrishes. Earlier that afternoon, Adrian had done the unthinkable. She had called the Parrishes to ask if they would give up table 20.
Just for tonight, Adrian said. In a stroke of what she thought would be bad luck, she'd gotten Grayson on the phone, and hearing his gruff voice, she'd almost chickened out.
I can't tell you the reason, but believe me, I would never ask you to move if it wasn't critical.
Grayson had chuckled.
Sweetheart.
Darla and I don't give a rat's ass where we sit. For the last 12 years, we've had everyone thinking we're more important than we are. Put us wherever you want.
Oh, thank you, Adrian said. Thank you, thank you. Now she led Darla and Grayson to table 11 under the awning. It was a very warm night, so she felt they would be happiest here. Darla took her seat and looked around in amazement.
I feel like I'm in a whole other restaurant, and look, you've changed the flowers.
Adrian sent Bruno over and told him to comp the parish's first round of drinks, though she doubted they would care. Grayson never checked his bill. Once the parishes were squared away, Adrian relaxed a wee bit. She had called Thatcher's cell phone 4 times over the course of the afternoon, but she hadn't left a message. Too much to say. Adrian sat guests, handed out menus, opened the white burgundy for the parishes, delivered their chips and dip, and helped Christo rearrange seating to accommodate 100-year-old woman in a wheelchair. Then Adrian spotted Harry Henderson's florid face at the podium, and she hurried over. The Elpern stood behind him. Lucy's hair was damp, and she had changed into a clean muumuu. Scott had thrown a white dress shirt over his gray t-shirt and traded in his jeans for khakis. Lucy was visibly dazzled.
Look at this place, she said. It is glamorous.
Rex was playing Frank Sinatra.
Can we keep the piano? She asked.
Adrian led the party to table 20, and Harry stopped along the way to shake hands with 2 gentlemen at table 8.
Amanda, he said when she handed him his menu, this was a really smart move on your part.
He sounded absolutely giddy. And why not? Adrian thought. He was sitting down to a free dinner with a potential 6-figure commission at the best table in the restaurant. My name, she said, is Adrian. Harry smiled. He had no idea what she meant. My name is Adrian, not Amanda.
Like Adrian Rich, the poet, Lucy said.
Yes, thank you, Adrian said. Now what can I get everyone to drink? Adrian did a kamikaze shot at the bar before she delivered the Elpern's drinks. Unprofessional. Possibly even unethical. But her stress level was so high that champagne wasn't going to cut through it, and she told Duncan so, and he put the kamikaze shot in front of her. It tasted like a bad night in college, though once she chased it with the Laurent Perrier, she regained her sense of humor. She went into the kitchen to put in a VIP order for the Elperns. The restaurant can run itself. Joe walked by carrying 2 quesadilla specials. They looked delicious. Antonia was expediting with his usual avuncular charm, calling everyone baby. Everything was going to be fine. Back in the dining room, Karen grabbed Adrian's forearm.
Table 20 wanted the fondue. I told them no.
Adrian peeked at 20. Lucy Elpern had ordered a glass of Laurent Perrier, and from the looks of things, it had gone straight to her head. She was waving her champagne flute in the air, calling out to anyone who looked her way,
"This bread is baked."
"Let them have it," Adrian said.
"Let them have it," Karen said. "You bumped the parishes for Harry Henderson, of all people, and now you're going to let them have the fondue first seating?"
She gave an incredulous little laugh.
"This isn't your restaurant, you know."
"Let them have it," Adrian said. She walked away before she and Karen moved on to more sensitive topics, like how Karen was still pissed at Adrian for putting Tam Vinodin at the bar, or how, technically, Adrian was Karen's boss. Adrian thought Antonio might veto her decision about the fondue, but a little while later, Karen passed by holding a pot of oil. She wouldn't meet Adrian's eyes, and Adrian's confidence wavered. She had never even worked at Pizza Hut. What was she doing, breaking all the rules while Thatcher was away? Was it all in the name of selling the restaurant,
Or was it to exercise power in a situation where she felt utterly helpless? A couple of minutes later, she checked on the Elperns again. Scott Elpern lifted a golden brown shrimp from the pot and dragged it lavishly through the green goddess sauce, then the curry. Was it any surprise that the man had no table manners? "How's everybody doing?" she asked.
"Adrian,"
Harry Henderson said before he popped a shrimp into his mouth. It wasn't a response to her question, so much as a demonstration that he had learned her name. Lucy Elpern finished her glass of champagne.
"Never better," she said.
Adrian approached the Parishes. They were eating in complete silence. "Is there anything at all I can get you?" Adrian asked.
"We love the new table," Darla said. "We like it better than the other table."
"You're kidding."
"At the other table, everyone watches you."
"Yes, they do," Adrian said. She glanced at table 20. The Elperns were having the time of their lives. There was no doubt in Adrian's mind that this time next year, the floor under her feet would be the Elperns' new living room. Adrian stopped at the bar to pick up her champagne.
"Another shot?" Duncan asked.
"Your girlfriend's pissed at me," Adrian said. "She thinks I put too many pretty women at the bar."
"If you stop, I'll be pissed at you," Duncan said.
Elliot, who never said a word unless spoken to, chose this moment to interrupt.
"Where's Thatcher?" he said. "Does he normally take a vacation in the middle of summer?"
Adrian was saved having to answer when she spied Harry Henderson on his cell phone, which was a Blue Bistro no-no. "Excuse me," Adrian said, and she hurried back into the dining room. Before she could scold Harry for using his phone, she sensed something was wrong. The atmosphere at the Elperns' table had altered. Lucy's face was screwed up, and Scott hovered close, squeezing her hand. Darla was right. Every other table in the restaurant had their attention fixed on the Elperns. The 100-year-old woman in the wheelchair touched Adrian's arm.
"I think that woman is having her baby."
Adrian smiled. "She may have started labor. We'll get her to the hospital." She sounded preternaturally calm, thanks to the kamikaze shot, thanks to the fact that she'd prepared herself for this possibility. You didn't invite a woman 3 days past her due date to dinner and not consider the worst-case scenario. Harry snapped his cell phone shut.
"I called 911. An ambulance is coming."
"An ambulance?" Adrian said, thinking sirens and lights. The pall of emergency and doom.
"The hospital is less than 2 miles from here. You could drive."
Scott Elpern glanced up. "We're in a rental car."
These, Adrian realized, were the only words she'd heard him speak other than "nice refrigerator."
"So?"
Lucy spoke through pursed lips.
"My water broke," she said. "I'm sitting in a huge puddle of yuck."
Adrian nearly laughed. Was this, or was this not, the theater of the absurd? She caught a whiff of something acrid. 3 shrimp burning in the peanut oil. Adrian fished them out, then she lassoed Spillman.
"Let's get guests their checks." This could turn into a circus.
Unfortunately, it was too late. A minute later, Adrian heard sirens in the distance, then lights flashed through the restaurant, and 3 paramedics stormed in like they were rescuing a hostage. Conversation in the restaurant came to a dead halt. Rex stopped playing. Adrian led the head paramedic, a woman with a long, scraggly ponytail, through the now hushed restaurant to the Elperns' table.
"She just started labor. I really don't think there's any reason to panic."
The paramedic knelt down and spoke quietly to Lucy Elpern. Adrian wondered what to do in the way of damage control. She would need a towel. She retrieved the San Katie Golf Club towel from the wine cave, and on her way back to the Elperns' table, she passed Darla and Grayson leaving.
"We loved the table," Darla whispered. But we're going to get out of here before there's any blood.
There won't be any blood, Adrian whispered back.
Would there?
Grayson palmed Adrian $100. The golf towel was very little help. The back of Lucy Elpern's muumuu was soaked, and this seemed to be a cause of concern for her. She didn't want to leave the restaurant.
Everyone will know, she whispered.
Everyone already knows, Adrian said, and it's no big deal. It's perfectly natural.
This is so embarrassing, she said.
The head paramedic called one of her guys for a blanket, and once they had wrapped Lucy Elpern up, they led her out of the restaurant to the ambulance. The guests at the remaining tables applauded politely, much like they did when the sun set, and the decibel level rose back to normal. Adrian trailed Lucy and the paramedic to the front door. The phone rang. Adrian glanced over the top of the podium. It was the private line.
Good evening, she said. Blue Bistro.
Hi, Thatcher said. It's me.
Tears welled up in Adrian's eyes, so that when she looked out the window, the lights of the ambulance blurred and became a psychedelic soup. She didn't know exactly why she was crying, though she imagined it was a combination of anxiety, relief, and the kamikaze shot.
Where the hell have you been?
She wanted to scream, but she held her tongue. She should ask about Fiona, about the hospital. However, there wasn't time to listen to the answers.
Can I call you back? She said, in, say, 15 minutes. I have to get first seating out of here.
Sure, Thatcher said.
There was a long pause, during which Adrian tried to think of something else to say, but then she realized that Thatcher had hung up. She replaced the phone as the ambulance pulled out of the parking lot, sirens screeching. Tyler Lefroy was standing at the podium, a put-out expression on his 17-year-old face.
Do I really have to clean that gross shit up?
Get a mop, Adrian said. Adrian wanted to call Thatcher back, but she couldn't. Tables had to be turned. There were 120 people sitting down at 9, and because of the Elpern spectacle, first seating was running behind. Adrian monitored the progress of dessert and coffee. Her foot was actually tapping. Turn 'em and burn 'em, she thought. The busboys were humping. Then Karen had a credit card war. Adrian had heard about these, but never seen one. Two men at table 8, by chance the very men Harry Henderson had stopped to greet, wanted the bill. They were fighting over it. Adrian's attention was called to the problem when she heard Karen's voice, much louder than it should have been.
Gentlemen, I'm sure we can work this out.
I'm happy to split the bill.
The men were on their feet now, tugging at either end of the bill. Thankfully, this was one of the last tables in the dining room. Adrian approached. The table was another realtor and his wife, a local lawyer and her husband. The lawyer's husband was the louder of the two men, though the realtor was physically bigger.
I thought we agreed, the lawyer's husband said.
Please, I insist, the realtor growled.
Adrian felt bad that she hadn't at least asked Thatcher how Fiona was doing. It was a big mistake that needed to be rectified as soon as possible. With a lightning-quick movement, Adrian snatched the bill from both men, then put her palm out.
We don't have time for this, she said.
Blue bitch voice.
Cards.
They handed over their cards, and Adrian spun on her heels. Karen followed her.
Impressive, Karen murmured.
Adrian tried to call Thatcher back after everyone from second seating was settled, but just as she felt it was safe to pick up the phone, Hector appeared from the kitchen.
The exhaust fan is out, he said.
What does that mean?
It means the kitchen is getting smoky.
Okay, Adrian said.
We need it fixed, Hector said.
Fine.
Tonight.
Tonight, Adrian said. She checked her watch. It's 9:45.
Cat, Hector said. Call her on her cell phone.
I will not, Adrian said. She's probably asleep.
If you don't call her, the fire alarms are going to go off and the fire department will show up.
Take the batteries out, Adrian said. Hector readjusted his White Sox hat.
This is an industrial kitchen, he said. Do you really think our fire alarms run on a couple of double A's? You have to call Cat.
You're kidding me, right? This is a joke.
Adrian was certain it was a joke, a prank to go with Lucy Elpern's labor, a little laugh at her expense while the boss was away.
I'm serious, Hector said. Look.
He pointed to the window of the kitchen door. Smoke.
I can't believe this, Adrian said.
The restaurant can run itself.
Ha,
as Thatcher would say.
Ha, ha, ha.
She found Kat's cell phone number on a list pasted to the front of the reservation book, and Kat answered on the first ring. It sounded like she was in high spirits. Too high.
Kat, it's Adrian calling from the Blue Bistro. Hey, girlfriend!
Hi, listen. I'm sorry to bother you, but we have an exhaust fan out. There was a long pause. Adrian feared she had lost the connection, but then Kat spoke up.
I just needed to step outside, she said. I'm having dinner at the Chanticleer.
Adrian groaned. The Chanticleer was in Sconset, on the other side of the island.
So you can't come fix it?
And leave behind the duck for two with pommes frites, Kat said. The bottle of 1972 Mouton Rothschild?
We could give you dinner here, Adrian said.
Hector said if it's not fixed, the alarms will go.
Well, said Kat. Another pause. I'm with a party of 10, and I know for a fact my husband can eat the duck for two by himself. I'll sneak out now and come back. They're so drunk they might not even miss me.
15 minutes later, the kitchen was filled with smoke such that Antonio could barely read the tickets. They had opened the back door of the office and the 6 narrow windows, and they pulled the 2 oscillating fans out of the utility closet, and Paco was yanked off his station. His new job was to stand in front of the smoke detector waving a large offset spatula. Adrian returned to the front. She drank her 3rd glass of champagne and contemplated another kamikaze shot. Every time one of the waitstaff emerged, he smelled like a barbecue.
Whew, it's getting bad back there, Joe said. Have you called Kat?
She's on her way, Adrian said, praying that Kat didn't get stopped on Milestone Road for drunk driving. Adrian considered calling Thatcher and asking quickly about Fiona, but she wouldn't be able to keep the panic out of her voice. As she finished her champagne, Kat walked in the door. Black cocktail dress, Manolo Blahnik, tool belt.
Praise Allah, Adrian said.
Kat stuck out her lower lip.
The 1972 Mouton Rothschild, she said.
We'll make it up to you, Adrian said. Kat disappeared into the kitchen, and Adrian called Thatcher.
Hi, he said. Is everything all right?
I was just going to ask you the same thing, Adrian said.
Her O2 sats are back up for the time being, Thatcher said. The doctors are worried, though.
About what?
She's becoming resistant to the antibiotics. And there's a lot of other stuff going on that I don't even pretend to understand. The doctor nixed the trip to the Galapagos, and Fiona was crushed. Can you make a note in the book for me to cancel with the travel agent? We'll be home tomorrow night. Fiona will be back to work on Monday. Would you pass that on to Antonio?
Sure, Adrian said, scribbling a note about the travel agent. No Galapagos, then. She thought she might feel relieved, but instead she just felt sad. Jay-Z was in this morning. He's worried.
He should be.